And it is recording, I believe. Looks like it is.
Yep.
Where's Will? Where's Will? We need Will.
The Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games. Bezier Games, the new classics. Final Frontier Games, bringing friends and family closer together. The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games. And Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up. Seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. We've got Sarah Meadows.
Kevin Delp.
Melissa Delp.
Ryan Pills.
And intern Dan.
In the house!
Yeah, so I'm not Will, but...
And Katie.
Katie's
had to duck out. Farron wasn't feeling the best tonight, so... She's not here for the podcast, unfortunately.
We miss them both. Yeah, sort of miss Will.
Yeah.
So what have you guys been playing?
Katie and I did have some fun earlier today. We invited some friends over since we had the day off for Martin Luther King Day. In the past, for our listeners, it was Martin Luther King Day today. We invited some friends over because they were talking about how they really loved the Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle deck builder game because it was cooperative and it was a deck builder. And Katie was like, well, we really love the Shadowrun Crossfire deck builder and we think it's a lot alike. So we played both games to just compare and contrast. And there's definitely differences, but there are similarities. I mean, they're both deck builders. They're both cooperative. They both have a either beginning of the turn or beginning of the round mechanic where just some sort of random event happens that you have to deal with either the dark arts or the crossfire event. So you just have to cope with whatever the game throws at you. But it was a lot of fun.
The expansion brings a lot more difficulty, I think, to the game. To the Harry Potter game, so it might be on the same difficulty.
This is
level.
Only my second time playing the Harry Potter game.
Okay.
I did feel like overall the Harry Potter is a smoother experience. Like it just has this progression that it ramps up in difficulty, kind of. But you're also actually... It's actually more of a deck builder because you see your cards more often. Whereas in Shadowrun Crossfire, you might buy, a 9-cost card and just never see it again.
Cool. Well, we all played Captain Marvel that we're allowed to talk about now. Awesome. And speaking of Captain Marvel...
I'm here to save the day!
What are we talking about?
Wait a second.
Captain Marvel's a girl.
She has a really deep voice.
Will just made it!
Hey! How are you guys?
Good. We actually just started the show.
Did you? Fantastic.
We talked
about too late.
Ryan's stuff that he's played and Captain Marvel. So now that we can talk about Captain Marvel...
Finally.
I know. We have some videos out that you're welcome to watch, some playthroughs and reviews. But want to tell you, it's basically a reskin of Bang, if you've played that Western-themed game, but with the Captain Marvel theme, so.
And the difference is, you can't, like, when you shoot the sheriff, or Captain Marvel, you can't sing, I shot the sheriff!
There we go.
That's the
biggest thing. Intern Dan is going out for a music career. Yeah. I appreciate that.
I was going to say, I've never actually sang that when I played this song.
Oh, man.
I'm sure there's probably a Marvel theme song.
Shoot the deputy!
Right, that's true.
And it doesn't change a whole lot from the base Bang game, but just having the Marvel skin on it is really nice. I think it's my favorite version of Bang.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I love the Bang dice game, so I'm hoping there'll be a Captain Marvel dice game.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I know when we were playing it with Brian that he literally... I've played Bang a number of times, but he was calling out, oh, this is the dynamite, which was now called a whatever laser, and this is the whatever. He could recognize exactly which card it was from the original. I haven't played it enough to do that, but it is, a true reskinning of the original game.
I think the dynamite is a cat named Cosmo,
It's Goose.
Goose, yeah.
So I'm guessing that's going to have some sort of significance.
Spoiler!
In the movie. So Kevin and I, we played Detective from Portal Games. It was case number 2. We actually
finally
started case number 2 maybe in August and then didn't get back to it. So
Did you remember? Did you take good notes?
We did. We had like a suspect board with all of the people on it and all of these lines and notes, and I had kept notebooks, and I'm looking over them, and I'm going, I don't remember any of this. So we basically had to refresh. And
some of it was coming back to me, though.
Yeah. But so that was a lot of fun. It's definitely work, detective work. It may have been about 3 hours or so.
I was actually just going to ask, how long did the first one take you?
Probably about the same.
Yeah. Wow. That's intense.
There's lots of leads, and you're putting stuff into the database, and you're looking stuff up online, and you're deciding how do we want to spend these limited resources that we have? Do we really want to spend it to ask this suspect another question, or do we want to go do something else? So a lot of it is also just talking things through as a team and deciding what to do and theorizing about what's happening.
I like Chronicles of Crime a lot better.
Really?
Yeah.
How many people did you have playing detective?
Four.
Okay. Do you feel like if there's more people, it goes faster or slower because you have more to talk through?
I wouldn't
yeah,
say.
Yeah, we've only played it at four.
I would say, the more players, the detective may actually be helpful, but
the time that I did play it, which is only like a half time, was at Dice Tower Con, and I actually like slipped in. They had already started. They were like, here, look this thing up. And I was like, okay, I don't know what I'm doing. But they had like six people playing it, and I felt like we were unlocking stuff and figuring stuff out pretty snappily. I feel like if you had multiple devices and multiple people looking in different directions, it would help. But I didn't really help them make any of the decisions, so I don't know how much time is wasted by a lot of people talking about stuff.
So let's see. You guys played a game from Stronghold Games, right?
Yes. Will and I played The Boldest.
Oh, yeah.
Last night. And it was an interesting... it's a deck builder.
Because you are
adding cards to your deck, but you only play with a portion of your deck at a time. So you're... there is a king that has sent troops to go out in these factions and try and retrieve some artifacts and take down some monsters. And you're supposed to try and gain as many items as you can as you go on these expeditions. Well, to do that, there are three expeditions that go, and you will select cards from your hand for each expedition, and then... whoever wins the highest number with each of those will send that group, and each type of character that you send to go can pick up different types of items. And so, and then depending on if you lost, those troops are still available to go next time. If they were successful, then they have to retire for the evening from being gone, and so they are gone for a turn. So you cannot use all those cards from your hand. So it was an interesting...
You did a pretty good job explaining it. It's hard to explain because it's such a weird mechanic. But basically, you have a full hand of cards that you start with. You're dedicating some of those cards to the round, but it's totally up to you. You could dedicate like your entire hand and definitely win all three of the expeditions or whatever, but then you wouldn't have any cards for the next round. So it's a good balancing mechanic. The interesting thing is, I don't feel like the theme had, like, you could have totally separated the theme from the game. They're not really related.
Yeah.
The art was really interesting looking.
But that's what I was going to say.
What was going on.
It's totally pasted on, but it's one of the coolest looking paste-ons I've ever seen. Like, each faction has its own super cool symbol and color scheme and everything that goes with it, and you play with them. Like, I just enjoyed looking at the cards, mostly. I'll just be honest.
Yeah. The artwork style reminded me of the art in Where's Waldo.
I saw that too, especially the Star Wars version.
Yes. If you haven't seen the book Where's Wookiee, you should check that out because it's super cool. The art style reminded me of that. The muted color scheme.
Got a very limited color palette, flat graphics. It kind of reminded me of the stuff that Ben Shipper does. Mm-hmm. That's what I like. That's more of a compliment than Where's Waldo, but I thought it was cool. Yeah. I really liked the style of art in the game. And it was interesting to play. I feel like I won. I don't really feel like I had an amazing strategy. I was kind of just like, put these guys out this time. So I'd like to play it again.
It was an amazing strategy.
Right. Yeah. I'd like to play it again to, like, really attempt to strategize. We were just learning to play it.
Yeah, so, I actually played two characters. So there were times where I couldn't remember what I did with my other character, which was
good. That's playing more honest.
Yeah, it was playing honest. But I was just very quick with making decisions, so I didn't do very well. Dan, what did you play this week?
This week I got to pull out Scorpius Freighter by AEG.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a fun space. You're a freighter captain trying to basically take goods from location to location under the nose of the evil government.
So a secret pickup and deliver game.
It's not really secret. You're just,
okay.
In theory, the game is this evil government, and every so often they come by and they audit your ship and they steal goods from you. It's okay. It's an action selection type of game.
Okay.
So you choose your crew, you tell, you know, okay, I'm going to do one movement with this, and then you get to pick one of three worlds to move the ship around the planet, and you have an action based on where you land. It looks really good, pretty light when you first look at it, a simple turn structure, but your choices get pretty in-depth. The guys I was playing with about halfway through were just thinking, whoa, there's a lot more here than we realized, but it was a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, why don't we take a moment and do a shout-out to our sponsor.
This episode is sponsored by Keymaster Games, publishers of Campy Creatures and Space Park. Their new game, Parks, is coming to Kickstarter on January 29th.
So Will and I have got a chance to play Parks, mm-hmm. and we did a preview video for it. And I am super pumped about this game. The artwork is absolutely amazing.
I didn't even actually know that this artwork project existed. Maybe I should have. They, I don't remember what it's called, but there was like a Parks project
the,
a couple years back.
The 59 Parks project.
There it is. I remember having a terrible time saying that in the video. and they put together a bunch of poster designers, put together art for a bunch of state parks across the country to kind of help raise
actually,
money to
national
promote them.
Parks.
Those ones. And man, the artwork is gorgeous on all of them.
Yes.
I don't really need posters of parks for my walls, but these are really cool posters. Like,
they
I would
are.
Totally put them up somewhere. And they've all and the, all that art is featured in the game, which makes the game a very gorgeous game.
Yeah, so in the game, you are taking your hikers down a trail, and along the way, you are picking up different resources.
It's a set collection game.
Yeah, it's a set collection game. So you might visit a waterfall and pick up water tokens, or you might do other things along the trail to pick up these different tokens. And then once you get to the end of the trail, you have an opportunity to visit one of the parks. And when you do, you'll need those tokens to be able to visit. And so if you visit, say, Mesa Verde National Park, it's mostly sunny there and there are mountains, so you'll need for two
appropriately themed tokens. Yeah, pretty cool.
Yes.
For
so,
each one you try to collect.
You know, all the different parks in there, the things that you will see at the park are the tokens that you'll need to be able to visit the park. So it has some interesting additions to just the set collection. It has some canteens that you can pick up that give you different actions, and there's gear that you can pick up that gives you some bonuses for picking up certain types of things. So I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I Will did too.
So you guys did a video preview of Parks as well, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, she mentioned that at the beginning, but yeah,
sorry,
it's out there somewhere.
That's for me that was not listening.
Is it, but the question is, I don't know, is it live or are we waiting to publish it?
It'll be live probably the day after our episode.
Oh, perfect. So you'll be able to watch it right now or tomorrow.
Well, why don't we jump into our first house guest segment with an interview with Ted from Bezier Games.
Hey!
It's great to be back. Thanks.
So we have you on to talk about Suburbia, the collector's edition. Tell us a little bit for our listeners, if they're not familiar with Suburbia, just a brief overview of the game.
Sure. Suburbia is a city-building tile-lane game where each player is adding all sorts of these interesting buildings to a borough, which is part of a larger city. And the goal of the game is to have the most population in your borough compared to everyone else who's playing.
So this collector's edition looks pretty awesome. You've put a lot of stuff into it. So how long have you been thinking about doing this? I'm assuming it wasn't just like, oh, a month ago, hey, we should do a collector's edition.
it was a little more than a month. I guess we started, we've been tossing around the idea for a while. I think probably maybe about 2 years ago, we started just discussing, you know, what it would take to do that. And about a year and a half ago, we found an artist and had them start working the tiles, because there are literally hundreds of different tiles that needed to be redone with the artwork. So we knew that was kind of the long pole, and we'd have to get all that done first. It's been a long, long time. It's a lot of fun though, because, you know, we get, you know, like one or two new pieces of art every couple of days. And so they keep trickling in, and you keep looking at them like, oh, that's cool. Oh, that's neat. Then everything else slowly fell into place. And and then over the last couple of months, we've been just finalizing everything, getting ready for both the Kickstarter campaign as well as, you know, exactly, you know, what it is we can do. We had so many great ideas. We had to decide, pick and choose kind of what was going to make it into the collector's edition to make it, you know, as awesome as possible and still not be, you know, like a $500 game when we're all said and done.
It looks like a great collector's edition with, like you were saying, all the different pieces. One of those pieces is the game trays that I think is sort of setting this collector's edition apart from many other collector's editions. Tell us a little bit about the partnership and collaborative design with the game trays.
Yeah, so Noah over at Game Trays is an amazing, incredibly talented individual. We've tried to put various types of inserts into our games and, you know, do some cool things with those if we could. Like several years ago when we published Favor of the Pharaoh, we made a clear insert that you could actually, put a sheet on the bottom of it to show you where the tiles go. And for Colony, we did one where you can put either sleeved or unsleeved cards in there and things. But it's a ton of work. It's a ton of work, both as a, you know, for the product design people who are coming up with these, as a game designer who's trying to figure out like how things are going to work, and the publisher to figure out how to get the costs right and where it goes and everything. Working with Game Trays takes a lot of that away, because, you know, they're super experienced in doing this. They have all sorts of great innovative ideas. A lot of the really cool, and we just, you know, originally it was, well, we'll get some cool organizers and maybe a couple things for display or something that'll look nice and whatever. But boy, they went above and beyond. And the trays, there are four trays and three lids in here, and all of them are just amazing, both in terms of how they store things and how they present the game on the table. And it really just takes the whole game up this huge, huge, not even a notch. It's, I don't know, whatever the next thing is above a notch, that's what takes it.
So double notch. Awesome.
Yeah.
So this game also, you have a lot of all the expansions that you've already published for the original game, but then you're adding in a new expansion. Can you explain a little bit about the Nightlife expansion?
Yeah, so the Nightlife expansion came about as we were getting this new art in. We tossed it. There's a whole bunch of expansion ideas for games typically that we have that just never make it out for whatever reason. And one of the things we got some art in, and I forget, was one of the folks here at Bezier Games, I think, said, you know, that's kind of cool. It's too bad it's not a nighttime scene, because it would look better, you know, thematically, it would look nicer. And then I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. You know, there's a lot of buildings that you associate with nighttime. And so, you know, things like, a tavern or we had a dance club, and we have what else do we have? All sorts of just fun things that are, we have a haunted house, of course, and just things that are more associated with nighttime than daytime. And you can put those in a daytime setting and it works, but it's a lot nicer if you actually have them in a nighttime setting. So, we kind of went with this whole thing of having a whole series of tiles that are actually the night view of these buildings and kind of the things that happen. And of course, at nighttime, things aren't always as happy-go-lucky as they are in the daytime. So, you're taking bigger risks. In the haunted house, it's kind of fun. When you build your haunted house, you get 13 people, which is, of course, it's a haunted house, so it's 13. Anytime you build another nighttime building in your borough, someone dies. So you lose a population. So it's kind of one of that thing like, oh, this is great. It's really inexpensive to build a haunted house. As it typically is. It's going to cost you over time. And over time, towards the end of the game, it's even worse, because now, you know, when you really need people, they're just dying off on you when you buy these cool tiles that give you these benefits. So things like that. And we made some fun, interesting thematic choices with that. And all sorts of, we even have a helipad as one of the tiles. So it's like a nighttime thing. Cause I don't know if you think about movies and like when helicopters, like there's always these cool dramatic scenes where the helicopters land on top of a building in the middle of a city. And so yes. We have that sort of thing where it actually looks like it's nighttime and it's the top of a skyscraper and there's a little place where the helicopter is landing. And so neat things like that.
So I would say one of my favorite things about Castles of Mad King Ludwig are all the different rooms and the fun different names and titles and dungeons and mold rooms. So it sounds like a lot of the tiles that you're bringing into the game kind of brings in some of that flavor and flair of, oh, I have this in my city.
Oh yeah, totally. There's everything in there. You know, I was saying before, there's the haunted house and helipad, things like that. But we actually have a police station, and night court. We thought night court was kind of fun. those are tiles that come later on in the game, and they actually undo some of those negative effects. You might have invested in some questionable areas for your town, like a back alley and a haunted house or something, and maybe even a werewolf. We have a werewolf den you can get.
I can't believe it's a werewolf den. Yes.
Well, you know, we figured there hadn't been any werewolves in Suburbia, so at least this way there's a way for them to get in there. Yeah. And all of those have some negative implications for your city. But if you get yourself a police station and a night court, you actually can get rid of all of those. In fact, the police station prevents any more from happening. So people don't die off anymore, for instance, when you have the haunted house and you get another nighttime tile. And the night court goes a step further and actually undoes all of those negative effects. And so if you lost a whole bunch of people in the haunted house, it brings them all back. And, you lost a bunch of money because you had the questionable area in your city where you're kind of losing money every once in a while, it brings that back. So it's kind of neat. So a lot of fun little things like that that interact interestingly together.
So Bezier Games uses traditional publishing route and the Kickstarter route. What are some of the benefits and challenges that you have with using Kickstarter?
So one of the benefits is, you know, we get to offer things that we might not be able to offer if we just went the regular retail route. So the retail version of the collector's edition is still incredibly awesome. But we just couldn't, as I mentioned before, you can only put so much in without the price becoming unwieldy. And, you know, retailers don't like stocking $200, $300 games for the most part. Or if they do, they're going to stock one of them or something. And, you know, then someone buys it and they have to wait another month till they order another one. So we wanted to keep the price point down near the $100 mark for retailers. And so if you're back on the Kickstarter, you actually get a bunch of exclusive things that we could only make available through kind of a system like Kickstarter, where we're actually shipping directly to customers. So that's one thing. As far as drawbacks go, it means that we have to get everything done way ahead of time and kind of plan for all sorts of things. And, you know, we're recording this and it's only been, 2.5 days since it started. And we busted through 21 of our stretch goals, which at the time was more than we thought we would need, which we're super excited about. But at the same time, we want to be able to give the folks who are back in the Kickstarter something to look forward to and something interesting. And so that's been the biggest drawback, is that we're kind of little victims of our own good fortune over the last couple of days here. So we're scrambling to try to come up with some things that don't delay the product, yet sure, still add some value for all those backers.
Yeah, that you always have to be careful. You don't want to add something and then be like, oh, it's going to take us another 6 months to actually take it to market.
Because they may be a little cranky that there's no more extra stuff on the horizon, but they're going to be really cranky if there's no game on their horizon.
Correct. Remind us again, the Kickstarter is going till February 12th, correct?
Yes, that's right.
And when are you hoping to get this into retail and to the Kickstarters?
We're on track right now to get everything done for October. So, okay. We have a pretty aggressive schedule, and this is there are all sorts of pieces and things for it. But yeah, October and Essen Spiel.
Wonderful. Well, it was great having you on the show, Ted. And we look forward to the more success for this collector's edition of Suburbia and the campaign. And just a reminder, it's February 12th is when the Kickstarter ends for our listeners. And we look forward to not only this, but many other games and campaigns that you have for the rest of 2019.
All right. Well, thank you. It was great to be here.
Bye.
It was great having Ted on the show. We're so excited about the collector's edition of Suburbia. We're going to tell you a sneak little secret right now. Ooh. So listen up, a little exclusive information for our podcast listeners. We will tell you more information about this later, but right now we are planning our Kickstarter campaign for beginning of April, where we will be offering lots of cool promos and game bundles and other things that are still in the works. But Bezier Games is creating a promo tile for Tantrum House.
Super cool.
From Suburbia. So we sent them some ideas. So we're not sure if it'll be like a coffee house or some sort of tantrum house sort of thing. But yeah, we're really excited about that. So why don't we jump into our Kickstarter conniption?
Kickstarter conniption!
Episode, we're talking about 9 games coming to Kickstarter the week of January 28, 2019. Kevin, start us off.
Simply Complex, which is actually an imprint of Capstone Games, is launching a game called Race for the Chinese Zodiac on January 28th. This is a 3-5 player game that plays in about an hour, and it's got some hand management, some simultaneous action selection. It's based off of the Chinese zodiac, where these different animals, or an animal is for each year, but basically the theme is the animals are racing to be first, so they can be the prominent ones in the Chinese calendar. I was able to play this the other day. Ryan and I and Katie were able to play this as well tonight. I would say once you understand the game play, it's pretty easy because you're basically just playing an action card with an energy card and doing what it says. But it took, I think...
The company name is very appropriate, Simply Complex, because when you first look at it, it was just overwhelming because there's so much going on. But then once you've played a round or two, everything makes total sense. And suddenly you're like, how was I confused earlier? So... it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think some of the cool things in the game are the different animals. They have asymmetrical powers. So there's some definitely variability and replayability with that. The different cards and how they're played and when they're played, I guess, would be even interesting with, I'm thinking about playing this card, or, I wonder what Ryan's going to be playing. Is he going to run this turn, or is he going to walk? Because the different action cards let you do different things. And if you don't play a high enough energy, you might get shut out of that round.
Yes, when I played, there were a few actions that I wasn't quite strong enough in my energy, so I basically did nothing that turn.
Yeah, I know. I think there is like maybe a little strategy where you're going to be like, you pretty much tell one person, one of your opponents is going to play, like cooperate. You can be like, I think you're going to cooperate. I'm thinking of cooperating. Why don't we both play the same energy card? And that way it'll, help us out in the game. So I think there might be a little bit more negotiation that I still like to unveil in Race for the Chinese Zodiac from Simply Complex. Melissa.
On January 29th, Daily Magic Games is bringing Chocolatiers. Mm. And you are trying to make a chocolate display. So this game uses set collection and tile placement. You're going to be collecting different chocolate cards to then match the chocolate tiles that are on the board. And once you discard your chocolate cards, you can take that tile and then put it into your display area. And you're trying to match the different types of chocolates, so you can have a long contiguous line of chocolates. And at the end, you're going to score based on majority. So if I have the longest grouping or biggest grouping of the heart chocolates, then I will get the scorecard that goes along with that. So this is Chocolatiers from Daily Magic Games. It's coming January 29th, and Kevin and I will have a preview video so you can kind of see a little bit more about that game.
Does it come in like a heart-shaped Valentine's Day box? Because I feel like with the timing and
think about it, by the time it actually comes out in like
the actual
retail
right next year also in
but there is something nice about making chocolates and I think you need to eat chocolate while you play.
While you play.
There you go.
That's right.
That makes sense.
That's right. All right, Will, what are you looking at?
So I'm looking at the game The Champion of the Wild, which is coming January 28th. I think we also may be doing a giveaway for this.
That's right.
At the end of the episode, so stay tuned. Yeah, we'll give you some more details on that at the end. This game is coming out. I think this is maybe their second Kickstarter, and it's a pretty hilarious-looking game. You've got all these different animal cards that are...
Yeah, sorry, but second Kickstarter, it actually funded the first one.
Oh,
this is actually
awesome.
A second edition.
Even better.
Yes.
So is the second edition the same as this?
I don't know all the details. There might be some new
additional tweaks and improvements.
But, yeah.
Okay, so in the game, you basically are a coach for a team of animals, I guess. And I think this is kind of a social game more than anything, where you are putting out your best card for the race, and then your animals are all going to compete against each other in like three different types of races, and so you're basically arguing and convincing each other of why your eagle would be better at the, you know, hurdles than the other guy's elephant or whatever. And for each round, you're negotiating and voting. Yeah, you're voting through it, voting for, you know, which one you think would be best at it. Whoever gets the most votes wins and goes on to that next round. It looks pretty cool. It's from Big Imagination Games and from designer Tom Clare, and I think it's coming to Kickstarter when this podcast launches. I think it's on Monday. So keep an eye out for that. And then, yeah, keep an ear out because we'll explain a little bit more about our giveaway in just a little bit. Ryan, what are you looking at?
Coming January 29th, I believe. This may change. January 29th from Steve Jackson Games and CMON Limited. Or are they called Come On now?
They are.
That's what I've been told.
Come On.
Come On. Come on.
You've heard it here first. We've actually talked to the company.
They said, quit calling us CMON.
Is a great game, re-envisioned as a more board game instead of card game, Munchkin Dungeon. So you've got still the classic Munchkin gameplay of striving to get to, I believe, 10 levels.
To be the second to last player to attempt to win.
Yeah. Try to get to those 10 levels by defeating monsters, but now you have miniatures in a dungeon. And there's different ways you can play. You can either go after those monsters and defeat them and level up, or you can run away and get shame and made fun of by your other players.
Nice.
I'm not entirely sure how that all plays in, but Eric Lang is on this one, so it's going to be a great game.
Obviously.
You know what it's going to be. So it's 3 to 6 players coming January 29th. There's not a whole lot of information on this, so I'm looking forward to seeing what's coming.
I've seen miniatures.
Yeah. So. It's the same great art. The same artist, I believe his name's John Kovalich.
I think you're right. Yep.
I don't know if I pronounced that well.
You're close.
It's like Polish or something. Mm-hmm. So, he also designed the miniatures, so should be great. If you're into Munchkin, definitely check it out. Dan, what do you got?
Intern Dan.
Yeah. Intern Dan.
Get it,
I apologize. I knew you before you were intern.
True. So on February 1st, PvP Geeks is bringing Sky Tear to Kickstarter. It's a 2-4 player, 30-minute to an hour-long game. They're basing it off of the MOBA-style games, Massive Online Battle Arena. They've developed their own original universe with their unique abilities and backstory. It's the kind of game where you have grid movement, you draft your heroes before you play the game, and you get a deck with those heroes. You can either go with the pre-built deck, or you can get into building your own deck and then fighting against your opponent. It's also kind of cool because the board is such that if I take faction A, I get to put my half of the board on the table, and it merges with my opponent's side of the board. So
what?
Each board has kind of its own ability and strength to go with your faction. You've got minis, you've got area control, grid movement. One thing I like with a game like this is no dice, so all the combat's going to be card-driven. Personally, that's a preference for me. And really, it comes down to... You have three random objectives chosen for the game, and if one of you completes one of those, you win. And they're not always strictly combat related, so yes, there is combat. That's obviously a major feature of the game. But there are other ways to win aside from just bashing your opponent down.
Interesting.
Yes.
Sarah, what you got?
So coming
January 29th, I mentioned at the beginning, is Parks. This is from Keymaster Games, and I thought I would just give a few more stats about the game. Parks is a 1-5 player game. It plays in about 40 to 60 minutes. It's from designer Henry Audubon. And the 59 Parks print series is featuring all the artwork from that poster series. So that's on all the cards. And this will be launching January 29th. So check that one out. Kevin.
So two games here at the end of our Kickstarter Conniption segment that I want to mention. One is the Overlords of Infamy that Melissa and I actually did a preview video of, or at least I did, I feel like it's been a couple years now, from Obscure Reference Games. They're bringing an expansion to this game on January 29th, and I believe it's bringing some more overlords to the game. I was just talking to the publisher the other day, so looking forward to January 29th, the expansion to Overlords of Infamy. And the other one is Zombies the Cure, so check out that game on January 30th. Maybe we'll get some more information about Zombies the Cure next week. So, but I did want to mention those two games before we close out this segment. Oh, maybe we got a 10th game that we didn't tell anybody about. That's right. Or is this number? Is this still number 9? Okay, hey, guess what? I can't count. So, Yokohama Duel as well. Many people are familiar with Yokohama from Tasty Minstrel Games, but we had Lance on, one of the employees of Tasty Minstrel, on our podcast for an interview. He talked in great length about Yokohama Duel. So check back, I think that was episode 74, 75, a couple of weeks ago, and you can learn more about the two-player version of Yokohama coming the end of January to Kickstarter. Why don't we jump into our next house guest segment with Spencer from IDW Games. Welcome to the house.
Hey! Thanks for having me.
Yes, so you work full-time with IDW, is that right?
I do. I'm the project and brand manager there, which basically means that for all the games that we're currently working on, I do some amount of work on, usually very from, it can vary from like top level stuff like theming and art direction down to the nitty gritty of doing mechanical stuff like development when we're looking at how a game plays. But basically every game we've put out in the last 2 years, I've had, at least some role in. Sometimes we get games that are nearly completed that are turned in and we like them. And so it's literally just finding the right art and finding, you know, the right, making the last round of revision on the rules to make sure they're clean. And then other times we get stuff that's, kind of mid development that we know we're interested in that we come back and say, we have the rights to X property or license, and we'd like to make it, make a game with that license. And this game seems like it could be a good fit, but it'll need some changes. And then I work pretty closely with those people when that happens to make sure that the game fits the license and it's going to kind of meet the needs of both the licensor and ourselves as at IDW.
Cool. So we have you on the episode here to talk about one of those licensed games. TMNT Cityfall.
Yep.
So yeah, tell us a little bit about your involvement with this project.
Sure. So the original TMNT big box adventure game that we put out in 2016 was called Shadows of the Past. What kind of happened was we put that game out, we kickstarted it, and at the time I was not at IDW. The person who had kind of my same position was Nate Murray, who's still with IDW, but he's in a different role. What wound up happening was we put that game out and we were really proud of the game's mechanics and how it played. Cause it wasn't necessarily like a true dungeon crawler. It had dungeon crawl elements to it, but it also was kind of like a lightweight RPG and a lightweight, war game. And blending in some of the dungeon crawl elements to it. But the coolest concept was something they were doing very interestingly with the dice, which was every character had their unique set of dice and they would roll them. And then the die that you would assign to like your left and your right would be shared with your neighbors. So it kind of gave a really strong team play element, which we really liked. The game came out in 2016 around, I think late October, 2016, and was actually critically received really well. It got a pretty, strong set of reviews for it. But there were, like, you know, minor nitpicks from the fan group, like not loving the graphic design, not loving the kind of art style that we used, which was a little bit of a blend between the comics and the cartoon that was just coming off the air, which was the 2012 Turtles, which was a CG cartoon. So it was like a slightly more family-friendly and softer version of the Turtles than you see in the comics, but it wasn't as far back or as out there as like the Fred Wolf stuff from the 80s. So fans kind of gave us, hey, the graphic design could be better. The art could be a little bit stronger, a little bit more like the comics. And then there's just like loose ends, like the miniatures had a scaling issue. The miniatures had some production issues that we kind of got a lot of feedback on. And so when we moved into this product, we wanted to make two boxes because we had been talking about doing Cityfall for a long time, and Cityfall has a particularly interesting story development in it from the comic series that we wanted to kind of recreate. But we wanted to kind of reset a little bit and say, all right, people wanted a line of the Turtles miniatures that were appropriately scaled and had like a better definition to the miniatures, as well as like update the graphic design, update the art, and update especially the board art. Like a lot of people said that the board art was a little generic in Shadows of the Past, so we wanted to kind of go back and update that stuff too. So we created two new boxes that are different than Shadows of the Past, and we kind of use those boxes as a jumping off point for the what we're calling the adventure system. So every game that uses Kevin Wilson's engine from Shadows of the Past, of course, obviously twisted and mutated to a degree, will be part of what we're calling the adventure system. And we have a lot of plans for that we're going to be announcing shortly, I think, moving forward. But these two games are really the jump off point for the adventure system. And it gives you kind of everything you would want as a Turtles fan. It gives you the Turtles. If you're a comics fan of the Turtles, it gives you some of their allies from the comic books. It gives you Shredder, Bebop, and Rocksteady. It gives you Baxter Stockman and the Mousers. So these boxes are kind of a good, I don't want to say like a hard resetting point because it's not 100% true, but it's a good soft relaunch of the brand, especially being branded as the Adventure System, so that when you buy other Adventure System games that may come down the road, this is a good starting point, and they will all be in scale with one another, if that makes sense.
Awesome. Can you tell us a little bit of differences between the two boxes that are in this system?
Sure. Yeah. So basically the first box, Changes Constant, is based on the first arc in the comics. And it's basically about the four turtles and dealing with Hob, who is a mutated cat that is a original creation to the comics, and Baxter Stockman, who controls the Mousers, who has been in the cartoons, but in the comics, he doesn't get turned into a fly. He's kind of just like a mad scientist. And he has an army of Mouser robots, and including like this Mega Mouser, which is this giant machine. So that box has those heroes. It has the four turtles plus Casey Jones. And then it has kind of two big bads, which is Old Hob and his street gang, which we just kind of call like street bruisers and street thugs. And then Baxter That's cool. Stockman, who has the Mousers, which are small, the little Mousers, and then the big giant Mega Mouser. So the story kind of follows what the turtles have to do to kind of defeat those two enemies. And in the comics, Baxter is kind of secretly aligned, and this is kind of recreated in other shows too. He's kind of secretly aligned with the Foot. So the Foot Clan show up a little bit while you're trying to take out Baxter Stockman. And then the second box, Cityfall, the big difference there is that Leonardo gets kind of brainwashed and hypnotized into becoming the leader of the Foot Clan alongside Shredder. So he kind of becomes the number two. So the turtles have to find kind of work with their friends, which Old Hob, who's a bad guy and Changes Constant, winds up becoming a good guy. He's like an anti-hero. He's like a Boba Fett-esque character, right? He becomes the kind of a friend of the turtles because of the kind of disagreements he has with the Foot Clan. And then as well as Slash, who is famous from the cartoons as well as the comics, he's also fights alongside the turtles, as well as Angel Bridge, who's kind of the head, or was kind of related to the Purple Dragons, which are another really popular street gang. She also kind of sees this as an opportunity to get rid of the Foot Clan who've overrun New York. And then Splinter's in that box as well. So that cool. box is basically about, you get five new heroes that are not the Turtles, and they're trying to save Donnie. And so if you have both boxes, you can mix and match heroes. So you can have like the turtles like Donnie go out to save Leo alongside a Splinter and Slash and Old Hob.
So we were able to preview the competitive mode, the one versus many, where Leo was on the wrong side. So so there's the co-op mode too. So is this co-op mode and competitive mode new to the Adventures system?
Yeah, it's a great question. Something I should have touched on before. So yeah, the competitive mode is updated, but it is the same system from Shadows of the Past, which is similar to like Dungeon Crawlers, like Descent, where you do have a kind of one player playing a bad guy, but it is asymmetrical. The villain player is playing cards to activate minions and do their attacks, whereas the hero players are rolling dice and using those dice to generate abilities, because the dice have unique die facings that give them the abilities, or certain die combinations can be used to activate a special ability card that the hero might have in play. Whereas the cooperative mode is something that fans were asking for a long time. And yeah, exactly. It's basically a whole new mode to these boxes. And it uses a really clever initiative deck, which gets shuffled at the end of the round, that says, hey, this is the character that's activating. So you really can't game the system by saying, hey, we know this character is going to go next every round, so we can kind of beat this person up. Because the initiative deck gets shuffled, you might be surprised to learn, like, oh, three bad guys are going in a row. And because of that, the heroes are kind of at a disadvantage this round, so we can't just game the system, right? That cooperative mode basically eliminates the fifth player, the villain player, makes it a four-player cooperative mode. Although, since you can create your own scenarios, and I know the game designers have kind of baked in some of these scenarios as optional scenarios, it is possible to do things like a five-player scenario where everybody is a hero and you're fighting off against like two bosses and a bunch of minions. But yeah, that mode is completely new, and it has a lot of like clever AI rules about like who is being targeted by the minions and the villain characters based on their villain sheets and based on the initiative cards.
So the Kickstarter is doing very, very well. Congratulations for that. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars raised already. Lots of stretch goals unlocked. At the time of this recording, the one stretch goal that hasn't been unlocked is Leatherhead, which is unlocking at $425,000, which probably is going to happen really soon by the time this episode airs. But will that be the last stretch goal, or do you think you might add a couple more before it ends?
We have a lot more left. We have quite a few. And you know, one of the things is because we work at, you know, with IDW publishing, you know, we're part of the games team, but publishing does all the comics. We have a really close relationship with what they're doing over there. And we have a lot of stuff in store for comic fans. It's kind of tough with the Turtles, because the Turtles have been, I think there's like 8 or 9 iterations of the Turtles between all the comic versions and all the, you know, cartoon versions and movie versions. There's a lot to play with. And we obviously don't want to do something too crazy out of the realm. But when people talk about the Turtles, really right now, the strongest, I think the strongest two are the ongoing IDW comics, which we have over 90 issues of, which is, you know, a lot of comics. Yeah. And then, as well as like the old school Fred Wolf 80s cartoons that kind of introduced us to the Turtles. So what we're trying to do with this campaign is do something that like people who maybe aren't super into the comics will get some stuff that they like. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, I get Leatherhead. For example, Leatherhead isn't exactly how he appears in the comics. He's more of a nod to the cartoon, because there's going to be people who see this and go like, oh, that's cool. They've updated Leatherhead to make him look more gnarly and ferocious and kind of intimidating, which is a little more in line with how he appears in the comics, but we kind of given him the outfit from the cartoon back in the 80s. But we've also got stuff that for people who are diehard comic fans, we still have a lot of stuff in store, and we have stuff in the boxes already, like Baxter not being mutated. Well, we did Baxter mutated as a stretch goal, so you get the best of both worlds. If you're a comic fan, you get the kind of comic lore true Baxter, you know, this kind of mad scientist who controls an army of robots. And you've also got a kind of updated, more gnarly looking version of Baxter as a fly, a little more horrific looking than the cartoon version, because we're kind of basing all of our designs on staying true to what the comics would do if they were going to update those characters.
Cool. So the Kickstarter campaign, it goes till beginning of February. Is that February 8th?
Yeah, that's correct.
And they can back the game for, I think, the base game at like $125. Is that right?
Yeah, so either box, either Changes Constant or City Fall is $125. And one thing to point out there it's really good to bring this up is that is our MSRP for a single box going into retail. People want to compare us to other games, and there's a couple of things I think we should point out is, unlike other big miniature games that are out there, we are paying a pretty big license to Nickelodeon for
D&D.
So that's part of our bottom line when we consider the price point for these. But also, while our miniatures, you know, we have I think Changes Constant has 60 miniatures when you count all the mousers. And then City Fall, I think, has 40.
Those mousers are pretty cool, too.
The mousers are so awesome. Every box has 5 heroes that run off 3 unique dice, right? So, each hero gets a unique mold for their die, and then they get 3 of those dice. And a die is similar in cost to a miniature when it's all said and done. So if you really look at the numbers, we're adding another, what would we would consider cost of good wise, another 15 miniatures to the box. A die and a miniature are nearly the same price when it comes down to production. And especially when each die has its own mold, every mold is another X amount of dollars you have to use to create individual molds. And the reason why we do that is because that's what makes this game unique versus other games. So each box is going to be $125 MSRP at retail. And then what we're doing right now is if you back the campaign at $125 each, or either of those boxes, you're going to get an expansion box for basically free, a $25 expansion box for free. With City Fall, it's the Deviation box, which is kind of a what-if issue we did about if instead of Leo being the one that got turned bad, what if it was Mikey or Donnie or Raph? And so they've got this kind of Foot Clan clothing that they wear, as well as they have a unique villain card that makes them play differently. We also have an alternate sculpt for Leo in there that's kind of like a slightly more dynamic sculpt, just so that the box is rounded out with 4 miniatures. And then for Changes Constant, we have the Usagi Yojimbo box, which Usagi Yojimbo is not actually controlled by Viacom. That is a box that is published, the artist, Stan Sakai, who did it, has been kind of independently publishing that stuff through Dark Horse forever. Stan Sakai and the creators of TMNT, Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman, were friends when they were both indie comic guys back in the 80s and 90s. And they did a lot of crossover events with each other because they're, you know, anamorphic animals fighting, you know, guys in ninja and samurai style. So they've had a close relationship, and I don't know how I would say it besides maybe they're kind of sister properties, right? They're estranged sister properties. The idea that they have some similarities and they like to do these crossovers. And Usagi's shown up and definitely in the cartoons from the 80s, the Fred Wolf cartoons and stuff. He has shown up and there's been Playmate toys and stuff like that of him. But he's still wholly controlled by Stan Sakai. So we were able to get Stan Sakai to agree to this and do the 4 turtles in the Stan Sakai style, as well as Usagi Yojimbo. Although we haven't shown his miniature yet because basically the miniature came over and it was done in the kind of more realistic style the rest of the line was done in. And we were like, no, that's supposed to look like Stan Sakai's art. And so they're re-sculpting him now to kind of make him look a little more like the rest of Stan Sakai's art. So there's a miniature of Usagi Yojimbo that is very much what he would look like if he was in the Turtles game without having an artist name attached to him. But I don't know if we'll ever show that. So that's a big secret. Unfortunately, we wanted that box to look exactly like Stan's stuff. So the Usagi Yojimbo miniature is kind of getting redone to look exactly like Stan's art. So those two are $125 each. And again, you're getting a $25 expansion for free. And then we have a $250 pledge level, which gets you everything, both boxes, both expansions, and then all the stretch goals we unlock.
Cool. Well, Spencer, it's been great having you on the show. Where can people find out more information about IDW Games?
The best place for us is probably just to find us on Facebook, IDW Games, on Facebook, just because that's where we keep kind of in the loop the most. But if you're also looking at Turtle stuff, if you go to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Adventures, there's a huge fan group there for people to check out as well.
Cool. Well, thanks again. And we look forward to much success for this campaign and others.
All right. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Well, it was super cool talking to Spencer and hearing some of the behind-the-scenes stuff with TMNT, Cityfall, and I look forward to seeing how that campaign wraps up. So, by the way, since Will and I did a preview video of Cityfall...
And it's doing very well, by the way.
Yes. We happen to have the prototype still, so we will have that available to check out at our library at TantrumCon.
What?
So if you want to try and play out one of the scenarios, we just have one scenario that we have the two scenarios that we have the rules for. So if you want to check out that, you can see that at TantrumCon.
Speaking of TantrumCon, might as well talk about our platinum sponsor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Keymaster Games.
Yeah.
Keymaster Games are doing parks, and I think if you come to TantrumCon, you can play some games of parks there.
Yeah, definitely. They've also got...
Caper.
They've also got Caper that is a lot of fun. It's a two-player game. I think we'll have that one there as well. And I'm pretty pumped just about our library in general. I think we've got, what, like 900?
Over 900 games. We should just, like, get another 100 and just put 1,000 to say over 1,000 games.
We didn't hit that. And I think we easily could because we've got a lot of these Kickstarter prototype games that I know people are interested in playing. Yeah. I assume we'll bring Captain Marvel with us and some of those other ones.
Yeah, I think we should have the Kickstarters maybe in a separate section.
Yeah, they might even have to be, like, with us so they're not actually in the library.
Can't check them out. Find a Tantrum House friendly... We need a TFLG. I don't know. Find one of us with a staff shirt on. That's right.
Because we could have those in a separate room.
Right. Yeah, we definitely could. We need to make a list of those games, though. Maybe we already have one in an
open. We started a list.
Because there's so many very cool, new, not even published games that we have been able to get a hold of that I know people are interested in trying out.
Sure.
So we'll need to have some table time dedicated to those ones for sure.
And a lot of our events are already filled up, but there's still room for some. One of them is our New York Slice event with our other sponsor for our podcast, Bezier. They are sponsoring New York Slice Party. We're going to do some pizza, real pizza while we're playing pizza. So...
Yep. Don't be confused by our April Fool's video from last year. Is that what you were saying?
That's right.
Yes. And we have 24 copies of the game that we're going to be giving away during that event.
To different people?
Yes.
Winners and
one
players.
Person.
Yeah, and I think we've got several other events like that as well, where we've got copies of the game that winners and or players will get just for competing or being a part of those premium events. And then you were saying we have several opening, or we are filling up fast, but we did just add a bunch of new ones this past week.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, because the Double Envoy, did I say that right?
Double Exposure Envoy
is hosting, is using TantrumCon as their South Carolina state qualifier for a lot of their tournaments. And so, I don't know, there's like 10 new ones or something. There's a bunch of brand new ones that we just added to the schedule for people to sign up for. And there's like... You win the game, or you win a trophy, or you win a free trip. Not a free trip, but a free pass to the next qualifier. So a lot of really cool things on the TantrumCon site if you check it out right now.
So Melissa and Sarah were special guests on another podcast. Tell us a little bit about that.
So we were on Rolling Dice and Taking Names with Tony and Marty.
Cool kids.
And we talked a little bit about TantrumCon. We talked about Kevin's hat. All
the
sorts of different
issues.
Things. And I believe that episode is going to air on January 29th. So just the day after this one.
Are they both planning to come to TantrumCon?
Oh, yeah.
I know they're going to be represented. Always enjoy hanging out with those guys. Yeah. We see them at several of the cons in the area because they are local to, I don't know where they're from, Charlotte, Charleston?
They're from Charlotte, Charleston, North Carolina. Near Charlotte.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And talk them into, you know, making sure they stayed for the VIP dinner, which is going to be like barbecue and other good Southern foods.
I think the real question is, will they be bringing the moon pies? Did you guys
get it? Yes, they are.
Okay.
They're bringing moon pies.
All right, good. Then, well, it will be a success. That's all
that was a tweet they sent out. I don't know if they talked about it on the podcast, but
The important details again.
Anything else about TantrumCon, or should we move into our giveaway?
Yeah, let's explain how to get a hold of the Champions of the Wild.
So if you go to our website, tantrumhouse.com, over there in the little corner, there's a little box that says Enter to Win. Click on that, fill out some information, and you'll be entered to win this sealed copy of The Champion of the Wild. That enters you in for all our contests, so go to it.
Well, cool. Good luck with that. I hope you guys do get a chance to enter the contest and to win. We'd love to see you at TantrumCon. thank you so much for joining us for another podcast episode. And keep an eye out, because I don't know if you tuned in for one of our recent YouTube lives, but we've been doing some new stuff out in the YouTube world as well, trying to give opportunities to interact with you guys a little bit more. We do a lot of the talking. I do a lot of the talking. Nobody. Everybody nodded, but I didn't get any comments on that.
You do all the talking.
But we'd love to hear from you guys as well, and so we really enjoy those opportunities to interact and answer questions and see what games you guys are playing. So thanks so much for joining us. We will catch you next time.
Bye!
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard. Thank you!
Holmes, Holmes.
What is it, Watson?
I think we might have a new case. How can we help, Miss?
It's Mrs. Mrs. Fields, and I need you to settle a dispute. We have a small home with room for one table. My husband wants a fancy gaming table, but I believe a dining table is more important. I'm sure you agree with me, Mr. Holmes.
What if I told you I could satisfy both your wishes?
I'd say that'd be astounding, Holmes.
The answer is the Holmes, or perhaps the Watson, depending on the size of your room.
You're not making any sense, old chap.
Those are the names of an ingenious product from Game Toppers LLC. The toppers are a portable solution that turns your current table into a high-end gaming table at a fraction of the cost.
Do you mean to say that the topper can be put on and taken off the table with ease?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes. You truly are as amazing as people say. I will take a look at Game Toppers LLC right away.